a good day. I'm excited about this. Got some nice full melodies this morning. It's amazing how that happens when you fill up a room. We're going to run some little wooden cars. How many of you brought a car to race today? How many here? And how many of you helped somebody put together a car? Either in the decision-making process or artistic area. That's fun. I mean, you see all the hands. This is like a family project we have going on here, right? We're gonna have a good day, I hope. I don't know about you. Maybe your experience is different than mine. Maybe I should open this right next to the mic. What's the longest part of the process for making a car? I know what it is for me, and from hearing some confessions yesterday of people saying, I'm doing my car today, maybe it's the same. For me, it's the design phase. I get this block of wood, and once I figure out what it's supposed to look like, I know what to do. I can get it cut. I get it painted. But it's that question of, what is this going to be? What's it supposed to look like? Maybe some of you are different. Maybe you knew exactly what you wanted it to be. Michelle's with me. Shaking her head no. Yeah, as soon as you start cutting, then those possibilities are off the table, right? We have a block of wood with the potential to be something incredible. So many possibilities, and we're just worried that, okay, what if I make a cut and decide I want something different? You can't add it back on. You know, there's a common saying that's been attributed to a lot of different sculptors. They say the way to make a statue is you figure out, you look for the figure within, and you chip away everything that's not that. Right? You've heard that. How do you make a statue of an elephant? Easy. You get the biggest block of granite you can find, and you chip away everything that's not an elephant. Right? And so that's been attributed to Michelangelo and all sorts of other sculptors who never said it. But you've heard that idea. And I think of that quote when I'm doing projects like this. And where I get stuck isn't the chipping away or the cutting, but I look at it and say, how do I figure out what's in there? Right? What is it supposed to look like? And I often feel that same way about my own life. I feel like I could do a really good job of working toward what I'm supposed to become if I only knew for sure what I was supposed to become. Right? If only we knew where that goal is, if only we knew what we're supposed to be, we could work toward it. What if I make a wrong cut? That's what I worry about sometimes. What if I'm going the wrong direction and I make a mistake? What if it comes out crooked? What if I just can't see that image of the final project? And you probably see where this is going. But the good news is, we're not alone in that process. God is not only our creator, but God is our craftsman. I don't know if I've heard that term too often, but I'm going to make it work today. I think maybe we should start. Now, creator is one of the first titles that comes to mind when we think about God. When we say, who is God? Creator is usually one of the first ones that we come up with. You know, it's on page one, and makes sense. That's what we think of early on. But when we think about it, on the grand scale of things, creation was easy. You know, let there be light, let there be water, let there be sun and moon and trees and seas and cats and rats and elephants. Woman, man, there was evening and there was morning, and it was good. Right? And I don't want to diminish creation. I don't want to put that down. It's a solid work week. Forgot there. And you know, we say God creates in a week, and I felt overwhelmed at times this week trying to put this together. And this is just a silly car race. So I don't want to diminish creation. But what I mean to say is that creation is easy, was easy, in that when God was done with creation, that was when the real work began. He said it was good. He didn't say it's finished. God doesn't make us and then leave us on our own. God's not going to say, good luck, I'm off to create another kind of beetle or something. God doesn't leave us on our own. God is the craftsman that continues to work. We have one person in the room here that knows about this longer process. This idea that crafting isn't a fast process. This crafting that God's doing with us can take a lifetime. I was talking with Caleb yesterday, and Caleb didn't have any problem knowing what he wanted to do when we got the kids out. Caleb said, I know what I'm going to do, and all you people who are using saws, you're missing the boat. Caleb said, I'm going to craft this. I'm going to carve, I'm going to sand, whittle. I don't know what all he said he was going to do, but he said, I know exactly what to do. And then we talked yesterday, and what happened?
I didn't.
How come?
It took too long.
Right. That part of crafting, about trying to get everything just right, it's a long process. And we say God doesn't just leave us alone on our own. God is doing this process that takes a lifetime to get us to what he sees inside of us, to see what God is wanting to do with us. Now, some people seem to come out of the box completed. You ever met these people? They seem to have it all together right away. I think about David from the Bible. You know, putting this together, I was trying to see who's a good project. David, I very quickly figured out David is not a good example of this long process. I'm going to get you where you need to go. Because think about David's story. The first time we hear about David, before we even meet him, here's how he was described. Ruddy, with a fine appearance and handsome features. We meet him immediately after, and he is immediately anointed as king. As soon as we meet him. The second time David is described, just a few verses later, Saul is looking for a harp player to soothe him. And listen to this recommendation that someone gives regarding David. He says, I have seen a son of Jesse of Bethlehem who knows how to play the harp. He is a brave man and a warrior. He speaks well and is a fine-looking man, and the Lord is with him. We've only known this guy for 5 verses. Within a chapter, he's killed a giant. Within 2 chapters, people are singing songs about him, and it's recognized by everyone that he is the leader of God's people, even while Saul is still king. This is not the type of person that we're talking about today. These ready, out of the box, have it all together. So if that's you, I'm sorry. At least I know you'll forgive me. That's how good you are. Let's talk about the other type. This morning we're talking about the long-term projects. People like Jeremiah. Jeremiah is one of the major prophets of the Old Testament. He's one of the most respected biblical prophets. He is frequently quoted in the New Testament. But if you read Jeremiah's story, You see, he came a long way to get there. When God called him, first chapter of the book of Jeremiah, Jeremiah said he was not ready. He's too young. Don't know how to speak. Not ready. And he was probably right. He probably wasn't ready. Who is? In a situation where God says, before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. Before you were born, I set you apart. I appointed you as a prophet to the nations. Someone goes, you're going to be prophet to the nations. Who's ready for that? He probably was right. But as a friend of mine likes to say, God does not call the equipped. He equips the called. God said, don't worry about whether or not you're ready. I'm still working on you. You'll have everything you need. And he did three things for Jeremiah right away in chapter 1 to put him at ease and start him on this journey of what God was calling him to be. The first thing he did is he assured him that God is with him. He says, do not say I'm only a child. You must go to everyone I send to you and do whatever I command you. Do not be afraid of them, for I am with you and will rescue you, declares the Lord. You notice, even in that statement, he's recognizing that it's not going to go smoothly all the time. You don't say, don't worry, I'll rescue you, if the message is, everything is fine. Everything's going to go smoothly. He's saying, it may not go smoothly. You may not say everything right. You may not do everything right. But I'm with you. And when we see Jeremiah's story, one thing I really like about the book of Jeremiah, unlike some of the other prophets where we don't have a lot of opportunity to see the interaction between God and the prophet. Sometimes we don't even know if the name given to the prophet is actually that prophet's name or some description. We don't know a lot about some of them. In Jeremiah, we see these conversations. We see Jeremiah trying to wrestle some of these ideas. We see a very much like a ground level view of the struggles that Jeremiah has. So first God says, I'm with you, don't worry. And next, he does something that seems kind of strange, but it makes sense. The Lord reached out his hand and touched my mouth. Don't ask me what that looked like. I don't know. But it meant something to Jeremiah here. He touched my mouth and said, now I have put my words in your mouth. See, today I appoint you over nations and kingdoms to uproot and tear down, to destroy and overthrow, to build and to plant. It says, don't worry about what happens to you. I'm with you. Don't worry about what to say. I'm going to give you the words. Have you ever felt that? You don't know where the word's going to come from, and then, boy, from somewhere. We got a pretty incredible God. I know I need that at times. And so he says, I'm with you. I'm going to give you the words. And then he does something that we don't see happening much with the prophets, but it happens a lot to Jeremiah. Right after saying, don't worry about being young, don't worry about what you're going to say, he starts teaching Jeremiah. It doesn't just get into, now here's what you're going to say. Go tell those people this message. He starts teaching, and he uses object lessons. You know, we don't do that too much from the pulpit, but you know, you go downstairs to the kids' class, and a lot of times you say, here's an object, here's something you know, and here's what something you can learn about some big idea from this. And God does this with Jeremiah frequently. He starts off here in chapter 1, where it says, he holds up a branch of an almond tree. He says, what do you see, Jeremiah? I see a branch of an almond tree. You've seen correctly, for I am watching to see that my word is fulfilled. This is a little play on words that don't get in translation, but I guess in Hebrew, the word watching sounds a lot like the word almond tree. And right after he says, word of the Lord came again and said, what do you see? I see a boiling pot tilted away from the north. And the Lord said, from the north, disaster will be poured out on all who live in the land. And he starts teaching him. He says, I know you're not ready, but I'm with you. I'm going to give you words, and I'm going to make sure you understand what you're saying. Several times in the book of Jeremiah, he has these lessons. Where in the middle of all this stuff going on, of Jeremiah speaking to the people and declaring that trouble is coming and running and getting arrested and having people want to kill him, you have this aside where God says, Jeremiah, what do you see here? I see a basket of figs. I see a linen ball. And God teaches them something about that. One of the lessons is maybe very appropriate for what we're talking about today. He has Jeremiah go over to a potter's house. He says, what do you see here? I'm seeing somebody making pots, crafting it. And so what happens, Jeremiah, when the pot doesn't turn out right? Well, you reshape it. You toss it out, maybe. And God says, I am the potter and my people are the clay, and I shape them. And if it goes wrong, sometimes it needs to get tossed out. Sometimes it needs to get reshaped. He says, that's what I'm doing to my people here. Throughout this book, as Jeremiah is getting these lessons, as God's saying, a lot of times he says, go and say exactly what I tell you to say. I'm kind of admitting that yes, you may not have the words. Here are the words. As we see this going on, you see Jeremiah becoming more confident. You see Jeremiah not needing the lessons as much. You see Jeremiah feeling he does know what to do. And in his interactions with God, he goes from early on very much struggling with what he's hearing. Like in chapter 4, he says, Lord, I feel like you're deceiving the people. You talk about peace, but we see these threats. Or he says, who can understand this at another time? A little later, he's talking to God. He says, correct me, Lord, but only with justice, not in your anger. He's saying, just bring me along slowly. And as it goes further and further, we see more trust being expressed. We see more confidence. And by the time you get to the end of the book, the last words that we have from Jeremiah, it doesn't say he had it all figured out, but it does something that is kind of cool in regards to what we've seen here. In his last words, he's speaking to Israel, which is in the middle of being taken over by the Babylonians, in the middle of this time where they're being taken into exile. And he's giving a prophecy, and at the end of it he says, to take these words, take this scroll, tie it around a stone, throw it into the Euphrates, into the river. And then say, so Babylon will sink to rise no more. Because of the disaster I will bring on her, and people will fall. And it says, the words of Jeremiah end here. The last thing we have is Jeremiah doing an object lesson himself. The same thing that God had done for him. And like I said, it doesn't say, and now Jeremiah understood all things. So we do see him having made this progress. We see him being far more confident, doing things he wouldn't have done back in chapter 1. But what we miss here, what we can miss if we don't look closely, from chapter 1 to chapter 51 here, it's about 40 years of Jeremiah growing, learning, being stretched, walking alongside God, talking with God. And we can say, look at what he became. But we also say, look what happened over that 40 years. All that time that he probably wasn't ready. All that time where he was getting closer and closer to being ready, he was doing God's work. You know, I think that over our lives we are supposed to get closer and closer to that thing that God wants us to be. How many of you feel you're there yet? You know, I think that we always feel like God has taken us closer and closer, but what we have to realize is that in that journey, in that time where we are being taken closer and closer, God is doing work through us from day one. It may not look pretty. It may not be that end goal, but God can do work with any of us. Ready or not, here we come, right? We get hung up with waiting until I feel confident, waiting until I feel ready. When I know enough, when I get that feeling, when, fill in the blank, whatever I'm waiting for, then I'm going to do something. I talk to a lot of people about coming to church, and they say, well, we've really been meaning to do that. We're trying to get a little better first. Or you hear, I'm afraid if I walk in the door, I'm going to burst into flames. You probably won't. You know what? The first time you come in, you don't know as much. You don't know the songs. Where else would you hear the songs? You got to learn it. Especially, I like the songs this morning, but every song had the four part with the echo, and they're a little complex today. Good though. You don't hear that someplace else. You have to just go learn. When it comes to committing to work for the church, with doing something. If somebody says, boy, I really could use somebody to set up some plates. Or somebody says, we need help. We need somebody to mow the grass. We need somebody to come say a prayer. The first time you get asked about that, you're not ready. But God can work with somebody who's not ready. And as long as we say yes, God's going to be with us. And we're going to do good, whether we are there or not, whether we are where we want to be or not. When it comes to baptism, how many have waited until everything is just right and I want to get that feeling that I'm expecting, or I need to know everything, and God tells us, you don't know everything. You're not going to, but I'm with you. And so why wait? God doesn't call the equipped. He equips the called. I don't know where you are in your journey. I don't know how close you are to looking like a finished product. But I know God's still working. And I know that as long as we're willing to say yes, God's going to do incredible things with us, sometimes even despite ourselves. But just like Jeremiah, it may be a long process, but if we look back, we see, wow, that wasn't me, but God can do something. If there's anything we do this morning, if in your journey you're hitting a hard patch and you need somebody to pray, We got people that will love to pray with you, pray for you. If you need to make a commitment, if you're saying, I'm ready, I've been waiting, but I want to see what God can do, what an incredible time for it. You know, we plan on doing fun stuff after here, but that's not what we're here for. If you need prayers, if you need baptism, if you need something that God is calling you to, that's what we're here for. This can wait. We are happy to let that wait. If there's anything we can do for you this morning, let us know. And this is a good time, as we're gonna stand and we're gonna sing a song. And that'd be an opportunity where everybody's already standing up, so you can get out without having to, you know, nudge past somebody. After the song, before the prayer, I think it would be a good time. I'll give a few instructions for what we're going to do after services. But most importantly, if there's anything we can do, please come as well.
Lord Jesus, would you live for Jesus and be always pure and good?